Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Well, it's always tough when a senior that's given so much to the program and was so much a part of the 2012 group can't finish it out. Jordan Lucas is officially out for the season for the Nittany Lions. Jordan is an outstanding young man. He and his family giving back to the university. Also, when we have him at quarterback club, plainly tells everybody he wants my job. We've had a good time with that over the years, but Jordan Lucas has given a lot to this program, and I hope Penn State fans appreciate how he was recruited in that group that came in 2012, played his 4 years here, and during the toughest of times played at a very high level for Penn State, and he's out for the rest of the year. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day, Monday Night Football, courtesy of WBBM in Chicago.
Jay stepping up. Jay steps up, throws. Oh! The catch into the end zone. Zach Miller, touchdown. Touchdown, Bears. Cutler fired a BB. And a one-handed catch by a wide-open Zach Miller for the score. And it's 20-19. Bears here in the fourth.
That was a remarkable catch. It put the Bears in front to stay. They picked up a two-point conversion after that, and San Diego loses another one late as they were beaten last night by the Bears, 22-19. That play-by-play cut courtesy of WBBM in Chicago, the flagship station of the Chicago Bears. All right, let's bring in Jeff Byers, because not only is basketball get rolling, I talked to Dick Girardi a little bit earlier today. Dick's going down to Annapolis. Great teams involved there. North Carolina's going to be there as part of the opening. Classic Temple's going to be there. Florida all playing at Navy. And he'll see that on Friday and then join me for the broadcast on Saturday at 1 o'clock when Penn State opens the season with Dan Earle and VMI. But wrestling gets underway. We'll have Dan Wernsberger from Bucknell on tomorrow. And as for the Nittany Lions, eyeing another possible national championship. They open with Lock Haven Friday night. Jeff Byers is the legendary play-by-play voice of Penn State Wrestling. Jeff, welcome back. It's great to hear you.
Good afternoon. Nice to be back.
All right. Let's start with talk about nice to be back. Nico Megalutis and Zane Rutherford. Nice to be back?
Yeah, I guess it won't be too shabby to have them returning to the lineup this year. A couple of guys that I really think, although they're not ranked number one here at the start of the season, I think a lot of folks would have them penciled in as the favorites to win at their respective weight classes. Nico Megalutis, really the only thing he has not accomplished in his remarkable career to this point is obviously winning that individual national title. And Zane Rutherford, now a redshirt sophomore, is just maybe the most consistent guy they have in the room in terms of doing everything really, really well. He's just an offensive machine, very difficult to score on, and is brutal on top. And I just think both of those kids, in addition to their wrestling skills, which are obviously formidable, they bring a leadership about them that is important, I think, for this program and for this year's team. They both just do things the right way. They're no problems whatsoever off the mat. They're both really good students, really good citizens of the community, and just guys that go in each and every day and really work on getting better and improving themselves. Again, both personally and athletically.
Jeff, when you've talked with the coaching staff and even with them, where do the two sides feel that each one of them benefited from having the year away?
for Nico, I really think it was just getting a little bit of a mental break. The physical rest was probably beneficial also for him, but I think it was just such a grind. I mean, he came in there as a true freshman, was thrown into the fray, had some frustrations during the regular season, and then obviously parlayed all of that frustration into a sensational postseason tournament where he ended up getting to the finals before losing to Matt McDonough of Iowa. And I just think Nico felt like he just was getting a little drained with the day-in, day-out, tenacity that he comes with to the room. So it was nice for him. I mean, he obviously practiced hard when he practiced last year, but he was able to take some time off here and there and give that body some rest and really just rejuvenate himself, and he has really come in looking as good as he ever has. I think more focused, if that's even possible, than he ever has. And for Ben Rutherford, I really think it was more about learning a few nuances, especially with his setups offensively from the neutral position. Zane was obviously very good as a true freshman himself, but I think this extra year just in the room has really helped him zero in on some things that technique-wise, where he really is able to score now in some situations and positions that he just wasn't able to 2 years ago. So I think it was good for both of them, but for different reasons.
All right, Jan Johnson, the story of Jan Johnson, and why is Penn State short at that spot?
Well, a couple of things that came into play. Obviously, they had the three very good heavyweights that all graduated at the same time last year in Gingrich, Lawson, and Regier, and so they needed to have a hole there. And when they had brought Nick Nevels in the year before, truthfully, it scared a lot of the other heavyweights off. They were aware that they weren't going to be able to get another scholarship kid in. They talked to several kids that they thought were good enough as workout partners and that could mature over the course of their time at Penn State to at least contend for a starting job. But they just were not able to secure anybody to come in that role. They had Anthony Kassar as a kind of backup in their minds at both 197 and heavyweight, and then Kassar got injured over the summer with a shoulder injury, and he's actually not enrolled in school at the moment. He'll be back, I believe, in either the fall or the summer here, and will rejoin the team at that time. But so it just was, it was a situation that they knew was coming and tried to address and just were not able to, and kind of kept their fingers crossed that they would be able to stay healthy at those upper two weights. And obviously, unfortunately for Nick Nevels and the program, he went down. And John Johnson, though, I got to tell you, Steve, I think has a chance to be just a phenomenal story here for Penn State. He just has a natural feel for the sport. Obviously, a two-time state champion, so he's certainly not unfamiliar with the sport. And it's a transition, obviously, to the college level. Probably the toughest transition in wrestling is at heavyweight. But he is such a hard worker and such a student of the game. And Cal Sanderson has really taken him under his wing. It's been a lot of time with him over the last 2 weeks here. And they're trying to be smart about the way they approach this, not overwhelming him with what they're trying to get him to do and with the information they're giving him early. But I think the coaching staff has been very impressed with how quickly he has picked some things up here in just these last couple of weeks.
Where do you feel Penn State, besides the obvious we just talked about, consistently get points in other areas besides, obviously, the names we just discussed?
Yeah, I think Jimmy Goulibon is the guy, Steve, that I was a little concerned when they talked about moving him up a weight to 141 this year. But he really put on good weight in the offseason, and he has just filled out. I mean, it is noticeable. His chest and shoulders have gotten significantly bigger from a year ago, and he looks to me like a big 141-pounder. I mean, he is a good-sized 141-pounder, and he is still so quick. And I really think that quickness is going to cause real problems for other 141-pounders. And with the 4-point near fall count coming into play this year, Steve, I just think Nico, that Denny has a chance to roll up a lot of technical faults against inferior competition and even against really good opponents. Again, you get one turn, that can really open a matchup, and Jimmy is very tough on top. Added a little bit to his technique with what he does from that top position. And I think he's going to be a consistent scorer. And obviously Morgan McIntosh going into his senior season now is the guy that they'll be relying on to win and win consistently. And the other thing to watch, Steve, obviously the two freshmen I think here that are likely to have the biggest impact in Jason Nolf and Bo Nickel, capable of putting up big points every time they're out. They're just both extremely dangerous wrestlers.
I think the expectation at the beginning of last season ended up being what the reality of the season was. What's the expectation now?
It's through the roof, and I think Al would want it that way. I think he is very excited about the opportunity that this team has. I think the coaching staff feels the potential is there for this to be the best top-to-bottom lineup that they've had since Cale Sanderson's come in here as head coach. There really is not a hole in the lineup. You know, Jan Johnson, just because of the uncertainty and the newness to his position, is probably the closest thing to a quote-unquote hole that they have in that lineup. But I think Jan's going to win a lot more than he loses over the course of this season. So it's just a really good lineup with high scoring potential at just about every weight. And I think this team feels as confident or as comfortable going into a season as any it has under Cale Sanderson. And obviously you're talking about a program that's won four national titles, so that's a pretty significant statement.
Jeff, always a pleasure. Appreciate it. Look forward to the opener on Friday.
Yep, should be a lot of fun. Thanks very much, Steve.
Jeff Byers. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Import car buyers, stop! Before you buy a Toyota, Nissan, Subaru, or Honda, you've got to check out the amazing value of a new Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai. 2015 Hyundai Accents starting at only $13,999. Or buy for only $213 per month. That's right, a new car for only $213 a month. And it comes with America's best warranty. 10 years, 100,000 miles. In the market for a Corolla or Sentra or maybe a Civic, you owe it to yourself to check out the 2016 Elantra. Hands down, the best value in its class. And SMC has them starting at $15,999. Buy for only $243 a month. Stop! And get the peace of mind you deserve, knowing you got the best car, the best warranty, and the best price. Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And at sunburyhyundai.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers.
Tax and tax extra. Financing based on 2.99% for 72 months with HMF with approved credit. Not all buyers will qualify.
Force Mr. Ham to hang up. You maybe hang up on a Hall of Famer.
No, I did not make you hang up on anything.
Oh,
I would have gladly have chatted with him for a few minutes while you continued with the show.
Yeah, but again, he seemed to be open to the fact, no, that's okay. I think we better go now.
I think I'm fine. I've talked to him before. You're it's fine. Not that exciting.
Jordan Lucas, by the way, out for the year. That's a real shame. Yeah, you know, senior year, he's a guy that had given so much. You know, and ironically, the story on Jordan Lucas is this. Jordan Lucas was to be recruited 4 years ago this past weekend. And Mike McQuarrie was the one that was supposed to go up there and see him. And then everything happened. So nobody went up to see Jordan Lucas. And then it kind of fell through the cracks because in the transition and everything going on here, so he didn't really know what he was going to do. And when Bill O'Brien took over, he went over the recruiting files and they found Jordan's file, took a long look at it, and then got engaged in recruiting him again and got him to sign here at Penn State. He was a very good corner here. He did a good job at safety this year. That senior experience helps. It would have helped them in the two games they've got remaining, plus the bowl game. But Jordan Lucas is a guy that I think the Penn State fans should long respect for everything he gave to the program. Everything. So he's out. They'll practice tonight. They will practice tomorrow. He will give them Thursday, Friday, Saturday off, and then back to business as usual on Sunday.
See, we had a couple of emails and questions here this week wondering if, because of the bye week.
I'm not interested. Let's move on.
if Coach was going to be on the show Thursday night.
You know what? I've had a lot of questions about that, and to my knowledge, based on the schedule I saw, I think he is. I know the lead guest, the first guest is Patrick Chambers. That I do know. I think James is doing the show. I'm going to see him in an hour, so I'll ask him then myself. I didn't talk to him about it. There are other things on my mind Sunday night to talk to him about besides whether or not he's doing the show on Thursday.
Well, you still have to do the show no matter if he's on it or not, so it's really not a problem for you.
Oh, yeah, for me, it's just, let's tell me who's there and we go.
Just point to the guest and say talk.
Okay, just say, look, who do we have? Oh, look, it's Pat. I'll talk hoops. Okay, look, it's James. I'll talk football. It's Erica Walsh. We'll talk women's soccer. So you know.
Speaking of soccer, the U.S. Penn State, by the way,
Penn State's the number one seed, one of the four number one seeds in the women's tournament.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I did not know that. The U.S. Soccer Federation is now banning headers for U10 and under. And maybe U10 is the lowest level now. I can't remember. But they also are now telling you should not or will not be able to practice it for those up until the age of 13 either. So in games, you won't be able to do it for U10.
Right. This is a concussion issue.
Oh, no question.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Well, and the thought process behind this is, Steve, as you get older, you're more apt to do the form properly and not end up banging a head with another player than at the younger level. Although I didn't see many U10s going with headers when Daniel was playing.
Kevin, two things. Number one, most youth soccer under the age of 10 is guppy ball. Okay, ball goes over here. All the guppies run to the ball.
It's a huge crowd following the ball. Yes.
There we go.
That's what I said. I don't remember too many headers when Daniel was playing. No.
No. And there's also like the right fielder syndrome, you know, the one that's over there, not with the other guppies, but is picking the clover. So, probably when you get to be 9 or 10. But this is with anything. You know, you talk about proper technique later on. In what sport does anybody have proper technique before the age of 10? Only the rarest of kids.
I've seen improper technique at the age of 17.
Okay, we'll get into your kid later. But let's get to...
No, I was talking about him.
I was
specifically talking about him. But, Daniel, you can't lead with your head.
Except for the prodigy, though. How many do you see with proper technique out there? I don't care whether it's a Little League game, it's Bulldog football, it's youth soccer, whatever. You have some that have some nice natural skill, and it sticks out right away. Like, wow, look at that. I mean, look how they tackle, look how they dribble. Okay, look at how they pass, how they shoot it, the ball skills that they have. Same thing in baseball. I mean, you put somebody in the mound as a pitcher and they've got some form, good leg bend, good drive, throw the ball to the plate, and are very good at it. Yeah, but the vast majority, it takes a little time to grow into your bodies. It takes time to understand the fundamentals of how to play, how to step up and throw a ball. Football, of course, obviously, how to block, how to tackle, how to do any of that stuff. So, the fact that they're saying, youth soccer players don't really know how to properly do a header, I don't see a lot of players, any youth soccer game I've gone to, head the ball to begin with anyway. Do you?
No, that's why. I mean, I don't think this is a bad idea. Don't get me wrong. But and I think it's more of an issue that they don't want you to work on it. They don't want coaches to teach it in practice. I think that's more the issue than during the game.
Right. And I understand. You know, look, it's a concussion issue. This is something that's gone back 5-6 years where I've heard about heading a soccer ball potentially causes concussions. You're talking about under 10, for example. Mind still developing, maybe, you know, the shock on the skull from the ball. I don't know. There's doctors that have done a lot of research on that. I, on the other hand, I will freely admit to all of you, I have done absolutely no research on it at all.
Well,
zero.
There were these.
I'm 0 for research on this topic.
There were concussion-proof head helmets. That came out a few years ago, and that was just a complete farce. They have a new helmet now, and I cannot think of the name of it right now. But basically, the head floats inside the helmet, so the helmet will actually move if there's impact. And that's showing some promise now for football. Obviously, that doesn't help with soccer, but...
Bottom of the hour, news update, Ben Arbozo of the day. As usual, multiple candidates. How does one choose one? All right, today we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Roads 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. Rex Ryan. He wins because I.K. Enampali will be the captain of the Bills against the Jets on Thursday night. Yes, the guy that broke Geno Smith's jaw. He says it's not a shot at the Jets, even though he punched and broke Geno Smith's jaw during training camp before he was released by the team. Guys, it's not a slap at anybody's face, Ryan said in a conference call with Jets reporters today. It's not a sign of disrespect. It's just what we do, and I've done it. You guys know I've done it that way ever since I came into the league. I don't get it, Ryan added when talking about the move as a jab to the Jets. I really don't get it. You guys know that I do the captains. If this was an isolated deal, or I just threw a guy out there, then I could understand it. But this is what we do every single week. Ryan pointed out that Richie Incognito and Jason Taylor, former longtime Dolphins, who played with him with Buffalo and New York respectively, were game day captains against the Dolphins. We're told that those two spent years with the Dolphins, while Emin Kapali played sparingly for the Jets for just one season. Ryan defended his linebacker, earning the game day captain nod. Well, he's been an outstanding teammate right here. And you know what? IK was one of the hardest working players I have with the Jets. Every single player on that team will tell you the same thing. Look, he's not perfect. He admits it. It was a terrible thing that happened. But you know what? We've moved on. So we'll forgive people. And we forgive guys. And he's a good teammate right here. I think he does earn the right to be a captain for this game. If I'm the Jets, I get one of those gigantic checks, and I send out the water boy, not a player, with a check for $600 to hand it to him at midfield, and then just concede the coin toss and leave. What do you think of that idea? one of those Happy Gilmore checks for $600, which is allegedly what the Smith IK deal was all about.
I like that.
$600.
Yeah.
Okay? You get one of those Happy Gilmore checks.
Where do I get one of those big checks? I want a big check.
Right. Well, you got a big check. Why don't I get one like that? He's got an entire trunk of big checks. Well, if I were the Jets, I would send out one of the managers with the check, concede the coin toss, and hand him the big check and turn around and leave. The crowd will eat it up.
I'm stunned that Rex Ryan is the bozo today. That just amazes me.
Oh, there's so many times I could go with the Cowboys organization. I figured I'd just try something different today.
He's been my bozo for years.
But you know what? On the opposite end is Wendy Nix. Wendy Nix of ESPN let the Cowboys absolutely have it. Absolutely let the Cowboys have it and their sponsors about how wrong, in her opinion, they happen to be when it comes to the Greg Hardy situation. And that I found to be very, very intriguing. And she was on the Sunday morning NFL, and she let him have it about Greg Hardy and the sponsor. She went after AT&T. She went after Miller. I mean, all those that are directly linked to the Dallas Cowboys organization financially. And she put it all out there, and I give her a lot of credit for that because she's absolutely right. As I told you when they signed him, and I told you when he was activated, I don't care if my job's on the line, and I don't care if this guy's the next Lawrence Taylor. You have to have some sort of professional standard about the people you hire. And he doesn't meet my professional standard. Not even close. And you have to look at women everywhere. And you should be very proud to say, you know what? We're not going in that direction. And by the way, you look at men everywhere and you tell them, we're not going in that direction. And you look at young people everywhere and you say, we're not going in that direction. I don't care if he's the second coming of Lawrence Taylor when it comes to the ability to get to the quarterback. I will find somebody else. And by the way, it is your option as the employer to find somebody else. It's okay to take a pass. And I have felt strongly about that from day one about this particular situation. This one reeks of all we want to do is win. Winning trumps all. Winning makes it okay. Winning doesn't make it okay. And I was talking about this, as Kevin well knows, long before the pictures of her back came out. If those pictures don't tell you a story, nothing does.
By the way, I actually dug up some of those comments that she made here on ESPN, if you'd like to hear those again.
Because
sure.
Here's the thing, even Greg Hardy's not stupid enough to turn down the kind of opportunity he got from the Dallas Cowboys, and I'll tell you right now, I wouldn't expect him to. So what about the man who gave him the opportunity? The man who's writing the checks.
Yes.
The man who's encouraged and enabled. Jerry Jones calls Greg Hardy a leader, and on Friday said his organization did not condone domestic violence. Well, guess what, Jerry? You sure do. But here's the thing, Boom. I'm an unapologetic capitalist. I believe in big business, and I am sure as hell in favor of profits. But at the end of the day, when economic principles can't be applied with even the smallest measure of social responsibility, there's one effective solution, and that's to let dollars vote. And that means you, American Airlines. That means you, AT&T. and Miller Brewing Company. And it means us as consumers of this great game. And you better believe I think it's a great game. But sometimes, just for the hell of it, you gotta take a stand. So if this is unacceptable to you, spare me the theatrics.
Let it be known.
Do something.
Let it be.
Jerry Jones has made his choice. Now let's make ours. And if the bottom line is the language Jerry Jones speaks, then let that dollar vote and let the message be loud and clear.
Wendy Nix on ESPN Sunday morning. Bold on her part, and now let me explain to you why. Who was a very powerful member of the television committee in the National Football League? Why do you think, for example, Jerry Jones is shown on screen all the time? Why do you think they always show you a picture of Robert Kraft? Why? Every game. You don't see pictures of the Rooneys, do you? You don't see Mike Brown of the Bengals up there, do you? No. But you always see shots of the members of the television committee at their games. Jerry Jones happens to be one. Everyone wants a slice of the NFL pie. There was a period of time where NBC lost the NFL pie, suffered, got it back. Fox then took the CBS portion of the pie. CBS then retaliated and then took NBC's portion of the AFC pie. NBC got back in it with Sunday Night Football. ESPN went from Sunday Night Football to Monday Night Football. You must, with the NFL, keep your toe in the financial water because it is incredibly profitable. And the television committee people are the ones that make the decision on what network gets what package at what price. Jerry Jones is a member of that committee, and by the way, has done an excellent job in that committee. It's not that he hasn't, but how often do you see these guys criticized by the networks? Because they know. They know it's the hand that feeds them. ESPN, for example, pays $1.9 billion a season. Not for the life of the contract. They pay $1.9 billion a season to carry the National Football League and Monday Night Football. And so you'll see, you know, a little here, a little there. I mean, why do you think Roger Goodell gets such an incredible pass? Why? I mean, Deflategate's embarrassing. By any business standard, it's embarrassing. I mean, really, think about it. And they won't let it go. But do you hear anybody outside of, like, you know, I mean, what Dan Patrick's take's been the same as mine? It's embarrassing. Don't you think? But are you going to hear others say that? Bob Costas, to his credit, always does bold commentary. And we don't all have to agree with everything, but Bob Costas does. He's talked about the Washington Redskins situation with the team nickname, things like that. Bob Costas has not. I mean, he is a powerful, respected voice. He has used that voice. Okay. But here's Wendy Nix, who hosts the NFL show. That was a powerful, powerful statement. When you were talking about the pocketbook of Jerry Jones, the pocketbook of the Dallas Cowboys, the pocketbook of AT&T, the pocketbook of American Airlines, and the pocketbook of Miller Brewing. She was very pointed in her commentary because they went out and signed this guy. I'm all for putting absolutely the best team out there, but you have to have some sort of standard. And I don't want, you know, and there are certain cases where you look at and say, second chance? Second chance someplace else, you know? That's bad. There are certain areas in life where you say, you know what? That's bad. Your second chance is going to have to wait a while. It's not going to happen now with me. And I think she deserves a lot of credit for the commentary and a lot of credit for how aggressive and pointed she was with the commentary. And as she says, look, I'm a capitalist. I'm a capitalist. Kevin's a capitalist. And
And at the same time, you've got to look at a situation like this and say, you know what? Enough is enough. Oh, what, because he can get to the quarterback? No. I'll find other people that can do that. The well is not dry. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, final segment of the day. Great to have you with us. Hope you've enjoyed it. Our thanks to Jeff Byers. Jeff joined us today, the play-by-play voice of Penn State Wrestling. Dan Wernsberger on tomorrow at 3:35. And also our thanks to Brandon Gowden from BleedingGreenNation.com. So, what about, let's see, John says, John on what? On Facebook?
Facebook, yeah.
Says, good technique, blah, yeah, the wrestling, blah, blah. It's usually the wrestlers always tell you what great technique they have. And then they have to be retaught. All right. Most youth have, again, if you're exceptional, you usually have really good technique. Most don't. Something tells me that there are some people that are in youth wrestling that have very good technique, and then others who are under 10 and kids. This is the nature of the game. Yeah. Yeah. I don't mean to generalize, but I've had kids. I've been around kids. I coached them. At a certain point, it kind of kicks in. And when it kicks in, it's really fun, but it takes time. It takes time. Some kids are really good at a young age. But that's some. Okay? I didn't say many. I said some. And that's in any sport, including wrestling. Including wrestling. There are some that have, at a young age, really good technique, just like I've seen 8, 9, and 10-year-olds in baseball, 8, 9, and 10-year-olds in basketball, 8, 9, and 10-year-olds in football, and so forth. Some of them really have a very good skill set at a young age. But many don't, and you know, some of them are growing into their bodies. You know, some of them are getting used to it. You know, some aren't driven yet by it. It's in every sport. So while I appreciate that John says that many have very good technique in youth wrestling, something tells me that some have very good technique in youth wrestling, and many are still learning and trying to grow into it. It's just the nature of the game. They're kids. They're kids. And sometimes you kick in at all different ages. All different ages. Sometimes you change sports later. Only the Tyler Davis kid for Penn State, he didn't become a place kicker until a year ago. He had never played football in his life. He played soccer his whole life. You know, you see some of those 9 and 10-year-old tournament baseball teams. So those kids now started to separate themselves in the pack a little bit. They're really, really good. You know, and with age, that happens. Yeah, usually about 9 or 10 things to start to kick in. You talk about under 10 soccer and headers. So something tells me in the wrestling thing, some have very good technique and many are on the learning curve because they're kids. And it really is that simple. Nothing more complicated than that. Everybody learns in all different ways. Some people learn by being shown it. Some people learn by physically doing it. Some people, you can show them a tape. Some people, you can draw up the play and they know it. I mean, everybody learns in different ways. And here's my favorite part. Just let the kids be kids. Let them be kids. I am very big on just letting them grow up and be kids. You know, the best thing that we did when we were kids is we did pick up everything. Pick up touch football, pick up baseball, pick up hockey, pick up basketball, right? Nobody cared who was picked last. And you just went out and played, and there was a dispute. You worked it out. No autopsy, no foul. Kids don't go out and do the kids don't go to playground anymore. It's all everything's organized this and organized that and organized this and organized that. Just slow down. You know, let's enroll them in everything. And all of a sudden, like, you know, then ask them later if they had fun in their childhood. I don't mind organized sports, not in the least. I played Little League. I played Pioneer basketball, things like that. Sure. I enjoyed it. But I enjoyed just as much the pickup stuff in the yard. We went down on a dirt basketball court and played basketball at 6 o'clock in the evening and had fun and played games to 15. Great. And then went out to the baseball field and played baseball. And then we'd play touch football. You know, and just had a good time in the neighborhood. Yeah. You'd be amazed how on the playground there's less pressure in life than there is when it comes to organized sports. There's more pressure in organized sports on youth. Playground? Not so much. I know people talk about, obviously, bullying is always going to be a problem anywhere. But usually if you're in pickup games, that's not happening. You're just playing the game, and you got mostly your friends out there, the whole deal. You get competitive. Everybody has their own personality. I understand that. But when it's over, it's over. And you don't have anybody yelling at you, you didn't do this right, or you didn't do that right, or you did this wrong, and whatever. You don't have, you know, it's amazing on the playground in pickup games, you don't have that, do you?
You know, there's one thing I learned in years of coaching and umpiring in Little League Baseball. It's amazing how those kids can hit the reset button 3 minutes after a loss, and all of a sudden, it's over.
Unbelievable. Absolutely right.
Hey, I see it at this level. I see it at the college level. I see the players. They have the ability, usually faster than coaches, to hit the reset button. But we really do need to have, I don't know if it's possible to get back to the playground mentality. You know, people have talked about, you know, everybody gets a trophy. Everybody, and about negativity and so forth. It's amazing on the playground, there isn't that pressure. You just play to play to have a good time. Now, you may get mad because you're not playing well. All right, tomorrow, looking forward to it.